Welcome to the Sam and Parker podcast. This week we're asking the question, are clothes gendered? Hope you enjoy.
Today we're going to be talking about, are clothes gendered? And it's a really loaded question because there's a lot that you can mean by that, because there's like gender and there's like sex and there's also the whole thing about like non-binary clothes.
Yeah, don't even get started.
So that's a whole topic, and I think we've got some blog posts planned that are going to go more in depth. I kind of just wanted to cover a general one.
Okay.
And I've done some research. I have like a whole bunch of research here, particularly like one lady that just did an amazing research project that I wanted to hit on. It talks about really interesting things. It talks about nurture versus nature when it comes to gender.
Yeah.
Because it's like, do the clothes that you put your kid in determine their gender? It's really interesting. Some stuff like that. What truly makes clothing gender neutral versus just it being men's clothing? And also something else that she covers is how do you make it accessible? Because she works with making it like autism friendly and stuff too, along with trans friendly.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really, really interesting. So the first thing I wrote down that I wanted to cover is there are a lot of studies that show that it's not really just a gender issue when it comes to gender neutral clothing. This study that I highlighted says it shows that female sports fans try not to wear feminine colors such as pink so that they seem like legitimate fans. And I think that really says something.
It's so embarrassing to me. Like, why can't you just wear a pink shirt?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I knew a lot of people that were like into the cults back in the day, and they had like the pink clothes. And like, oh, it's not the real thing because it's not blue. Who cares? It's got the logo on it. You're showing interest in it. You don't have to be 100,000 knowledge by the book person to enjoy something.
But it's also just showing that this is a like cross topic issue, not just an LGBT issue. I just wanted to point that out before we get into the study. So like I said, I mainly did one study. I put a lot of quotes that were taken out of the study that we're gonna read on here and then talk about. So I wanted, in this case, to give a specific shout out. I'll be including all the links in the description. But I wanted to give a specific shout out. I guess I assumed lady, I should say they, person. But it's called Clothing, A Statement of One's Gender Identity, and it's by Chloe Louise. I don't even know how to say that last name. It's spelled M-P-A-M-E. So take with that what you will.
Napame?
It's a cool last name.
It is a cool last name.
So I reviewed their literature study. Like, they did a literature review type of thing and then also did a bunch of stuff to study on their own. I reviewed it, took notes, and took out the most important parts. I will try to link everything that they linked also to source-wise, so that if you were interested, that you will be able to get it in the description of this podcast. First thing I wrote down is a quote, and it says, clothing is the most prominent way that bodies are gendered, ultimately presenting one's identity to others in terms of masculinity or femininity. Which I thought was interesting, because it's kind of like, in a lot of ways, like not really showing gender, but in a lot of ways, clothes show whether you're masculine or feminine, regardless of sex or gender. It's how we express ourselves in those ways. For the most part, obviously it's fluid, but I just thought it was worth mentioning. Another quote is that most clothing manufacturers dismiss the gender-sex distinction and instead rely heavily on assumption that sex and gender are fixed, stable categories, and everyone's gender identity maps directly onto their biological sex. So that's what clothing manufacturers themselves are assuming. It's that it's men's clothes and women's clothes. And they've, like, there's no difference between gender and sex to them at all.
Which I think is a boundary thing, am I thinking of? Regional thing.
Regional
I think thing. It's a regional thing, because I mean, different cultures have different opinions on what genders clothing, you know, and like some cultures, skirts or skirt-like objects are more masculine things, whereas here in the United States, it's more considered feminine. You know, it's just like different cultures mean different things. So yeah. We're coming at this from like the United States point of view.
Definitely. I think that's interesting though, in that so many conservatives are so set on like the American idea, but really what conservative means is old school values.
Yeah.
And if you look back at cultures old enough, like even in 100 years ago in America, I believe, like either 100 or 200 years ago, it's the like pink and blue were swapped, and that pink was a masculine color and blue was a feminine. And then also it's like pictures from 100 years ago, they up until they were like 5 dressed boys as girls, and they just like dressed everyone in like girls type of clothing.
Where did this swap happen, you know? It's like, what generation did it? You have to like look down the line. And a lot of people have different arguments. Like some people say it's like when the Christian takeover happened, or when Britons took over, or any of this bullshit. It's just like, you never know. You know, you have to go through and like really like deep dive it. It's more of a sociological view that I don't think is our expertise.
No,
but it's really interesting to talk about for sure.
The next quote I have is John Spade and Catherine Valentine identify how the gender coding of clothing is an example of the exploitation of gender and how capitalist organizations sell the consumer's gender itself. Spade and Valentine add to this idea, informing us that clothing designers and manufacturers of gender-neutral clothes still include just enough gendered elements so as not to erase completely masculinity and femininity, thus suggesting that intrinsic capitalist value is bred by a society's obsession with gender. So that's a lot of that really is a lot of complicated words. To break that down, it's talking about the intersection between gender and capitalism exploiting that. And so what it's saying is clothing companies are so focused on not having entirely gender neutral things due to money reasons. They're selling gender itself by selling men's and women's. And even when it is gender neutral, there are still parts that are more masculine and more feminine to it. And so that's basically what that is saying. But it's saying that the reason why it's kind of stayed like that way for this long, is also because of society's obsession with gender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't care what anybody has to say, society is very obsessed with gender. And they like talk like it's like just a liberal thing or just like a Gen Z thing, but it's not. Because just by arguing that clothes like should be like separated by boys and girls or whatever, you're focusing on gender. So
definitely, yeah.
I don't understand why they're not understanding that. I've argued with my parents and like other people that are very passionate about that. And it's like, are you not realizing what you're doing? Because you're doing it too.
They don't. Even with the use of they/them pronouns,
mm-hmm.
like conservative and Republican people commonly do not realize the they/them pronouns are used every single day and have been since the beginning of the English language. Like,
one of my favorite things is when you ask somebody what their pronouns are and they go, oh, I don't have them. So you just refer to them with their name. It's hilarious. And it's just like, you're just embarrassing yourself at this point, you know?
Well, that and something I've done a little bit of research on, but not a lot, is that with learning different languages and different languages' cultures, a lot of them have gender-neutral terms. Because there's some things, like I took some years of Spanish, in that certain, like, nouns are, like, gendered a certain way. Funny, like, I don't know, that's always been weird to me. But even then, even in that, like, we usually still learn, like, a gender-neutral term. And then in a lot of, like, I don't know if Japan's that way. There's some languages and some cultures that are intrinsically gender neutral in the way they describe things. I've heard a lot of non-binary people talk about it. I don't remember what I was thinking Japan, but I'm probably wrong. I don't remember what country, but I've heard about it before.
There is a genderless language called Estonian. It has no gendered pronouns.
Huh.
For example, in this language, a man and a woman are both referred as ta. Moreover, for both males and females, the same nouns, pronouns, and adjectives are used. That's cool.
Yeah, I was mainly referring to nouns, like, particularly, mm-hmm. where some countries gender them and some do not. Yeah, I know there's been more studies done on it recently.
Armenian, Tagalog, Persian.
Persian.
Has a pronominal gender system that includes both common and gender neutral nouns. I'm not even going to attempt to try to pronounce those. They have a he, a she, a form of it that apparently is the neutral term. Turkish? Swahili? I think Swahili is the one that I was thinking of.
Oh, okay.
But there are also many words that are gender neutral. And Cantonese. Those are the ones I was thinking of. It was Cantonese and Swahili.
Yeah, so like for example, English is not inherently gender neutral, but there are gender neutral options. Mm-hmm. And I think it's that way, like, I know I've seen people talk about Spanish, mm-hmm. And saying that there now, especially, like, there's a lot more dialogue that's sort of, like, being added to help, like, the whole gender neutral thing, and there's certain things that they can change, like, that are basically the Spanish equivalent to they-them pronouns.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah, I've heard about that, of course it was on Twitter, don't believe everything you read on Twitter, but I have heard that.
No, so I took Spanish in high school. And I hated it for that specific reason because I wasn't out to my teachers in high school. I was out to a lot of my friends. But I never felt comfortable no matter what because the language was so gendered.
That's interesting that you bring that up because, I mean, I've said that I didn't really struggle that much with gender throughout high school. Basically, throughout all my life, there's been little things that bothered me, even though, like, I mainly identified as a cis female. Mm-hmm. But Spanish class was one of the things that bothered me. Because you had a list of boys' names and girls' names.
Oh, yeah.
And you had to choose one for yourself. And the one I chose, I hated so much. I would literally cry if they referred to me as that.
No, I hated
it. I just wanted
too.
A cool name. Like,
and I didn't mind. I thought it was like a YouTube meme. And it turns out I had the wrong name in mind. So it's even worse.
Oh, no.
Because it was like the Rolanda videos.
Oh.
Yeah. I thought that's what it, I thought it was Yolanda. So that was my name in Spanish.
Oh.
And then I like turned and listened to it again after I'd picked that name and wrote it down and turned it in and I went, oh, not the same thing.
I think mine is Cecilia.
That's kind of cool though.
No, I hated it. I despised it the whole time.
No,
I literally
refused. Any Cecilia's out there.
I literally refused. No, that's a great name for other people. I just hated it for me.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't suit you at all.
No. It's just awful for me. I definitely like, with having a gender neutral English name, yeah. I really needed that for a Spanish name too. Oh, one of the most interesting things out of this entire study is the next thing that I quoted. Mm-hmm. And it says, it is often parents and mothers in particular who act as the agent and who play the role of gatekeeping, controlling, and legitimizing the consumption of purchases of food, toys, and clothing for children. And so what that is saying is it is oftentimes the mother that is telling the child that they need to play with certain toys and they need to act a certain way and they need to dress a certain way. Sort of like to adhere to feminine or masculine qualities.
It's really interesting.
Yeah. Because I thought about it for a long time.
Because I feel like, especially in Midwestern and Southern culture, in the United States, I feel like a lot of times it's like the masculine figure.
Oh no, I definitely felt I 100% agree that it is usually the mother.
Really?
Well, I thought about the case with you is I feel it's more your mother being the one, like not that your father doesn't like think that way, but it's been more of your mother being like the Nazi about it.
I guess that's true, yeah. I mean, my dad never really gave a shit about it before.
Yeah. His mom did. And that was how I was too, where talking about being raised in my gender neutral, my dad never ever cared what I wore, never cared what my hair looked like or anything like that. And then the second I would get with my mom, she would put me in the girliest and the ugliest clothes imaginable and do like weird stuff with my hair, and I hated every second of it.
Yeah, I think we've compared photos before. We had similar clothes.
We did have similar clothes because we're the same age.
Yeah.
And so like it's all the 2001 through 2010 horrible, like, the like floral dresses and that one specific Christmas outfit that's like red velvet and white fur. I'll literally die.
The little black like ribbon belt.
The black belt.
The little stupid stud in the middle.
Yep.
Yeah. I hate that damn thing.
It's that one. We both have pictures of it. It's so funny.
It's ugly. No, I was so cute as a baby because I had like, I guess I was like a baby because I wore all Tommy Hilfiger and most clothes to me that are Tommy Hilfiger are pretty neutral and I loved them. I looked so cute. I had like my little denim bucket hat, my little overalls, and I was adorable until about like 3 and then it was all pink and all frills.
Okay. So, as Parker knows, this next quote shocked me to my core and I have not stopped talking about it since. So it says, current gender-neutral collections therefore prevent equality due to them being literally just menswear, which continuously reinforces stereotype and assumptions that femininity and feminine clothes are inferior and unsound, while masculinity is normal. And so the source says, Wiley, what fashion needs to understand. That's what that's taken from. And ever since then, every time we're in a store, I'm like, do you realize that gender-neutral clothes are just menswear? I haven't stopped talking about it since because it's so interesting to me. I never thought about it that way. Like, truly.
You know, we had this discussion yesterday. Yesterday or the day before. Like, we've been having it a lot lately.
Well, yeah, I'm telling you, every time we're in a store, I bring it up.
I went on Old Navy because they have supposedly a gender-neutral line, right? And this is just like for shits and giggles. It's like I got on some new shoes, but I was like, I want something on sale. And I'm clicking through. They got the men's section, the women's section. I was like, what happened to those gender neutral clothes they have? I haven't seen those. So I was looking through the men's clothes, and all of a sudden they were there, gender neutral. And I was like,
that in the section in the store for our store at least is in the men's
section,
side.
Yeah. And I was looking at it, and I was sitting there going.
Well, it was the same way for Target. As much as I love Target, I adore Target.
Oh yeah.
But when there's a specific gender-neutral line that I adore, once again, it's definitely just men's clothes, but we're not gonna talk about it. it's a line that I adore. It's in the men's section. That's what it is, and it doesn't even say gender-neutral on it. So it's marketed like men's clothes, but it technically is their gender-neutral line.
Yeah, I don't understand it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess because they. Like traditionally, women's clothes are cut differently.
Well, like, and we're going to talk about that too, but, like, in the specific Target line, it wouldn't hurt anything to have more feminine quality clothes. Because a lot of, like, I know it's a stereotype, but gay men like them sometimes, mm-hmm. depending on the ones. And femme lesbians, like, it just, like, it goes, like, to such, like, a broad stance. Yeah. So it wouldn't hurt to have both. Like, in gender-neutral lines.
I think they're just scared of kickback, genuinely. And it's, like, one of those things, it's, like, it's, like, the frustration with companies changing their shit to, like, rainbow during Pride Month and everything. It's it's like, if you want to prove that you're supporting us, make that bold statement, you know? And they were supposed to do that. They were supposed to, like, remove the genderness of their toy sections, and I still have not seen that happen. At least not around here. Yeah. And it's, like, if you want to be that voice, and Target has multiple times stated they are going to be that voice, but they only seem to do it in big cities. They don't bring it like to everybody else.
That's what. So when we were coming up with our official business plan for the rebranding, I brought that up, and I did a lot of research on that topic, essentially about like the pushback of having gender neutral clothes and having it be completely gender neutral. And it truly found that allies, like LGBT people and allies, are really on board for this whole idea of gender-neutral clothing. But then there's just a specific group of conservative Republican people that are against it. And yes, you're going to lose them, but at the end of the day, it's worth it. Mm-hmm. It is completely worth it.
I mean, at the end of the day, they'll probably wind up coming back. You know, it's like,
it depends, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely depends. But it's, especially in these smaller towns, you kind of only have a couple options.
If they're all gender neutral, then what are you going to do?
Yeah, literally, like, you're going to live off your farm? because I don't think you can give up your cell phone enough half the time.
Yeah.
So it's like, they'll come back. They'll come back. They'll get used to it. Especially if we make it more normalized, they're eventually gonna come back.
Well, that, and it's really, like, the study I found too, like, did a comprehensive research thing about how it's not taking away anything from people who don't prefer to be gender neutral. Because we're gonna talk about the cuts more too, but like, you look for the style and the cut you like and you buy that. Like, yeah. That's all it is. Like, and it would be the same way for cis men and cis women that were shopping in these collections.
And it's not necessarily the same thing, but when I was more feminine presenting when I was younger, like, you're forcing that stereotype. It's like going into like Forever 21. And you're like, oh damn, that's a really cool shirt. And then you pull it out and it's a crop top. Or H&M. H&M and Rue 21, they're both really guilty of that too. And like, you'll be like, oh yeah, like you'll see in the distance. You're like, oh, I really like that color. I really like that cut. And you walk up, it's a crop top. Every time.
Yeah.
It's kind of along the same lines of what's hurting it to where you can just make it a normal shirt. And then if you want a crop, cut it.
Well, and like, I guess we can go ahead and talk more about cuts now. So the thing with having gender neutral cuts and like having it, like having a website or a line that just shows like the fabric and the cut, it's really inclusive for people with different body types. Because there are a lot of cis men that I know that, especially the ones that either are really muscly and have bigger like bones or that have more weight on them, they tend to not have a completely flat chest and their hips tend to be larger than other like just like either skinny or like other types of men. And then there are men that are like as flat as a board too, and it goes with women too. There are women that don't have like anything near their chest hardly, and then there are other women like me that are extremely curvy. And so like, it's like, to me, I'm like, what would be the problem with just looking for your body type?
Absolutely.
Cause like, you could find like a fabric you like and a print you like, and then you're just like, oh, this one has room for if you have a bigger chest, this one has room for if you have like more weight in your like hip area or one more stretch there. Like, you know?
I just don't think it should be a problem.
Yeah. That's the thing is, I really haven't seen it done by very many companies. I did research some, and there's very few companies that just list cut.
Oh yeah, I believe it.
And I feel like, and I haven't ever seen it in the store, and I feel like it just needs to be way more normalized.
Sure.
Okay, here's the last quote that I have, which this is still part of this overall study, and this is the person that wrote the study talking. It says, "This project has made it clear that if we want children to discover their true identity and uniqueness without being tied to stereotypes, we need to change our understanding of those stereotypes. We accordingly need to change the gender norms that society has created by raising and teaching children to have healthy gender expressions without shame and stigma when they deviate from society's construct of gender. Indeed, the importance of parents and caregivers providing love, support, and autonomy has been stressed throughout the report. Truly, all children require encouragement, love, and care from their family, school, and society, which can foster growth into happy and healthy adults. Rather than policing a child's gender transgression, we as parents need to help children live their childhood in the gender that feels the most authentic and most comfortable, allowing them to express their true gender selves. The participants are examples of supporting parents, with all claiming that they never or only 1 to 2 times a week choose their own children's clothing. Instead, they allow their children to express their own style. We as parents can learn from the example by embracing child autonomy." So the participants that they were referring to, it was done in their study, which once again, I'm gonna link that whole study so you can check it out. Because there's like full-on pictures and everything. But they chose a bunch of parents that had kids and did research on what would happen if we just let the kids choose between more typically boy and more typically girl clothes. What would they end up being like if the parents didn't police that? And that's sort of, to me, that's a lot of like nature versus nurture. It's a lot of, are the kids born with these things or is it just the parents telling them to be a certain way? That's what I found super interesting about this.
I know, it's always fascinated me, and I've had friends that didn't necessarily not gender their children, but they didn't force it, and it's amazing to see how much happier these kids seem.
Because in my personal opinion, everything is kind of like a case-by-case thing. In my personal opinion, widespreadly, I believe that it is in our nature, not our upbringing, as to where our like feelings about gender come from. I know society has a play in it, but in my opinion, about the cases I've seen and about myself, I truly believe that I was born the way that I am. And that was like, that's the way I've always been, regardless of society's influence. Because I feel that even though my mom tried to put me in more feminine clothes, that's not what I like. And I ended up going back to what I like.
Yeah.
And I also saw, I can probably find the study and link it. A streamer that I watched was talking about it yesterday. And he was talking about a study that was done on a cis male. Mm-hmm. And this cis male, they tried to give him a circumcision when he was a baby, like when he had just got out of the womb. The circumcision somehow got botched on accident and they completely messed it up. So they decided to turn it into a research study. And this surgeon basically did like a trans surgery on this baby. And they made it so this child looked basically completely like a girl, like anatomy or body wise. And from that point on, his parents raised him as a girl. They put girl clothes on him and told him he was a girl, but he ended up coming out as trans and saying, no, I'm a boy, I feel like a boy. And then he found out what happened to him.
Huh.
Yeah, it was a whole study. I'll have to find the exact study, but it was a streamer talking about it.
I feel like I've heard that before. Maybe you told me about it.
I don't think I've told you about it. I just found out about it yesterday.
Then I've definitely heard about it though.
Yeah, I'll be able to find this study, but it was super interesting.
That is really interesting.
Like, that's really cool.
Huh.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I've always firmly believed that there's more to our brain patterns than what scientists know of right now.
Definitely.
I 1000% believe that.
Well, it's also like, I'm sure you learned about this, and anyone who's taken psych 101 has probably learned about this, but the twins, they got separated,
mm-hmm.
and then they lived almost the exact same life. Like, their wives had like the same name and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, that proves that a lot of stuff is nature, like, rather than nurture.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, there's the story about the kid, I think it was like Kid X or something, where I could be totally wrong on this, but I think they might have been intersex.
And the other one's offensive.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really offensive.
I'm sorry, I didn't know.
No, it's okay, my brother uses it too.
I legitimately didn't know at all.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was offensive.
As far as I know, it is.
Okay.
But
intersex.
I think they might have been intersex. I could be wrong. I haven't read this movie in a long time. That I know it's super famous, and literally like completely raised the kid 100% neutral, do not have any toys that could be even considered masculine or feminine, and like I think they still wound up choosing the path.
It's cool.
So it's like something that's just genuinely wired into our brains.
So do you feel the same way? I love what I said. Do you feel that even if your upbringing would have been different, you still like were like masculine, essentially?
I know that,
yeah,
because of how feminine I was raised.
Yeah.
I mean, it was bad. Like, we were like, it's not like we were like a cult or anything, you know, it's not like we were raised with that kind of mentality.
You were raised with more policing of it than I've ever
heard. Oh yeah, my mom was very policing of anything masculine was a sin. And which is really funny because I was considered a tomboy growing up too. Like, I remember like wearing a pink dress for Easter and getting mad that there wasn't a pocket for my worms. Okay, like I remember like throwing a little hissy fit about it. I was not a kid to throw a tantrum, but I'd be like, why don't they put pockets in these things? I gotta put my worms somewhere. I remember getting mad about that.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I remember always wanting to be my cousin because he had Legos and he had cars, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. I used to always play with his stuff, but my mom wasn't there.
Yeah.
So it's like one of those things, it's like, I was raised really feminine, and I got forced into that for a while. I mean, like you, I was in a really bad relationship where I was told I was the girl of the relationship, and I was told I was too feminine to be a guy.
It's the worst feeling when you know you're not something and everyone around you is telling you you are.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
Being trans is like.
Yeah. I never thought of it that way, but like even in the experience I had, like it's awful. Yeah. Even as like a person that has been like cis most of her life, like that, like I still understand that feeling, and I think allies of the community can still can understand that feeling sometimes.
Absolutely. And it was so funny because I was in that relationship. I mean, we were kids, we were in middle school. But they had it very, like, I tried to come out to them. I didn't know the term because, again, I was raised religious. I just knew that I liked women at the time. And I kept being like, I don't know what I am, but I don't feel like a girl. Like, something's wrong. Like, I don't, like, I'm sad. I was like, I'm really depressed. And it's because I don't feel right in my body. And I remember specifically, we were like in the bathroom, we were at a school dance, and she looked at me and was like, no, you're too feminine. You're the girl in this relationship. And then she came out as trans later. And I only use she because they detransitioned immediately. Like after a couple years of it, they backed off, and they have a lot of different things going on, or they did at the time. But
the whole detransition is really hard, like, because you don't know what
to use
sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially when it's not discussed by them. When you just, like, hear they detransition, you don't really know, like, what to say.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that it wasn't, like, a transgender or any of the bullshit that, like, normal people say. I mean, they were genuinely mentally ill.
Yeah.
And they have been, I know, like, a lot of personal stories about them, and it was that. So, like,
well, that happened with, like your more serious ex,
yeah,
too, right? Like, mm-hmm. Like, wasn't it, like, all of your relationships before me, they said you were the girl with the relationship?
A lot of them, yeah. Most, I mean, not everyone. Not everyone. I had a couple that were, like, kind of okay with it.
But most.
But a lot of them was telling me I was too feminine, and that I was the femme of the relationship or whatever, or, I needed to be more feminine, more girly, because I was with them and they don't want to be with a guy. Which was my fault for dating a lot of lesbians. I can say it was my fault for putting myself down like that. But I was also in a really dark place. I was in a really bad mental headspace, and I just needed somebody, and I wanted to be loved. So that was my escape of it.
You kind of thought you could, like, play off yourself as a lesbian, like, just to get by with a partner.
Genuinely, yeah, and it's not okay, I should never have done it, but I was so, like, I had a lot of internalized transphobia, and I was really mad at myself, because I still felt really religious at the time, because I was raised that way, and it just, I felt wrong. I felt like a sin. I felt like I was never going to be loved, so I thought, maybe if I have this quote-unquote lesser sin, being a lesbian, then I can have a partner that can be loved, and I'll just be sad for a while, and then I'll get over it. That's not how it works. You know, any kids out there that are doing the same shit, it doesn't work that way. No, you get more and more depressed, and you start to not see or recognize yourself anymore, until you bite your tongue and you just take it, and you'll feel so much better.
I think that's my advice to anybody, trans or LGBT or not, is not to focus so hard on relationships. I know it's hard. I know it's really difficult, but it's the most aggravating thing to me when someone honestly believes that they have to have a relationship to be whole, because so much of it is, so much of, like, developing yourself is being alone and figuring out who you are and figuring out how to love yourself, like, without someone else there. Mm. That's my opinion, genuinely.
Yeah. And I've went back and forth on that for years, because I remember being alone and getting mad when people would tell me that. But I'm
it's hard. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. And it's also, I think in some ways, it's a neurotypical view. I know a lot of neurodivergent people that don't feel that way. And I'm on the fence about it. I think for me personally, I've grown a lot better being in relationships because it's not that I put all my faith and trust into it, but it also gave me the space to be accepted and be loved, but also had the space in healthy relationships to discover who I am and be able to have somebody close enough to talk about it and not be in my own head too much. But it's definitely different for everybody.
Yeah.
And definitely, I would not put all your focus into relationships, especially at a younger age.
Well, don't put your whole identity in a relationship.
Yeah, definitely not, no. Especially when you're younger. Because a lot of us, we got put in really bad relationships and put a lot of focus into it.
Yeah.
And
Even us, we're an extremely serious relationship. Mm-hmm. We've been together for a year now. We've been engaged for... We've been engaged since February of 2022, and once again, extremely serious relationship. We're living together, all of that, but knowing what I knew about past relationships and about abuse and about putting your entire identity into a relationship, I do checks with myself where, away from Parker, I look at myself and I look at my life and I say, would I be happier if this relationship ended? Or would I be happier, alone, you know? Like, or would I be happier with somebody else? Like, am I still happy with this partner? Is this still, like, fulfilling what I need in life? Are our goals still the same? I do checks with myself all of the time. And I actively work to try to be able to have a life without my partner. I try to, like, if you're at work, I try to do things that make me happy. I try to go see my family, things like that, to prevent isolation. Because that's what gets you into bad things, regardless. Like, neither of us are abusive towards each other right now, but you never know what could change.
Yeah.
You don't. No matter how much you love your partner, you don't know what could change.
Yeah. And especially when you're coming with background of mental illness. I mean, we both are diagnosed with different things. And I'm autistic. Sometimes things get out of hand, and you don't intend for it to be bad, and you don't intend for it to be toxic, but it can happen.
Yeah.
And partly being an adult is being able to recognize that. I mean, I can recognize that parts of my past are toxic, and I've worked hard to make sure that's no longer a thing, but it can come up again.
I think part of it is being humble, too, mm-hmm. where that's something that I've worked on the most of while being in this relationship, is recognizing when I do something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like you said, with us both having mental issues, like I recently got like officially diagnosed with ADHD. And then I've had like prior diagnoses of other things, but, with my ADHD, things can get out of hand. And I have, when they did like my ADHD assessment, they said I was extremely impulsive and that was the main thing I have out of ADHD. Which can cause me, if we're play fighting or if we're doing something, it can cause me to lash out and hit. Mm-hmm. And it's not good. It's not good to hit your partner, even if it's a joke, mm-hmm. because it can turn into not a joke. Mm-hmm. It can turn into something that hurts them. And so part of it is me being very conscious and saying, I'm not abusive, but I'm not going to let this go mm-hmm. any further. And like learning how to help yourself, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Don't forget to follow us wherever podcasts are available to stay up to date on new episodes. Thanks for watching.